For nearly one in four American women who have experienced domestic violence, escaping an abusive relationship is no easy feat. Victims often face economic and psychological pressure to stay with their abusive partner. Even when they seek out help, these men and women can still be at risk, sometimes fatal violence. An average of three women are murdered by intimate partners every day in the United States. A recent report from the Violence Policy Center found that Michigan ranks in the top 10 states for the number of these domestic homicides. And here to talk to us about how our state ended up on this list is April Zioli, associate professor in the Michigan State University School of Criminal Justice. Dr. Zioli, welcome. Good to have you here with us.
Good to be here.
Can we start with some numbers first off? What do we know about how common domestic violence and homicides related to domestic violence are in Michigan?
Well, we know, as you mentioned, that one in four women, some studies suggest that one in three women above the age of 18 will be victims of domestic violence within their lifetimes. So that is, you know, a very high rate of intimate partner violence. We don't really know the percentage of those cases that end up as, you know, domestic violence homicides. But domestic violence homicide is rare, happily. In Michigan, in 2013, the year the Violence Policy Center study you cited looked at, 73 women were victims of homicide. And those victims were mostly victims of intimate partner homicide, so killed by a spouse, ex-spouse, boyfriend, common-law spouse, someone they lived with.
Those are the ones that we see profiled often. They make the news, they make the headlines. But proportionally, fortunately, as you point out, of the many women who are exposed to domestic violence, the number of homicides is pretty small. The question that people who have never been around or experienced domestic violence have, the question is, why don't the women leave?
Well, they do. Actually, you know, many of these women leave many times. There are many barriers to leaving. There can be financial barriers, as you mentioned, particularly if you have children. If you don't have an income to fall back on, if you don't have a place that you can take them, leaving is not going to be as potentially good an option for you. Many women are driven into homelessness when they leave their intimate partners, and they take their children with them to the homeless shelter. So financial barriers are part of it. They may also not get support from their friends or family, religious community, community at large to leave. So leaving can be very difficult, but with resources like MSU Safe Place, like EVE, like the domestic violence shelters and resources across Michigan, leaving is a little bit easier. They can help make the transition for women. They can lead women to legal and financial resources and help women to get out.
Leaving can be a safe time, but it also can be a time marked with a high level of risk and danger.
It can.
What's the correlation? What is the causation there even?
Well, the most dangerous time for women, the time that they are most likely to be killed, is that first 3 months around leaving. And separation is one of the leading risk factors for intimate partner homicide. The thought is that intimate partner homicide is about power and control. It is the abusive partner trying to dominate the victim. And when the victim says, I'm leaving, I'm getting out of here, I'm taking the kids, that is a very real challenge to the perpetrator's power and control over her. So he might retaliate with even greater violence, which is why we think we see homicides. He may also try to put other pressures on her to get her back. We know that when women have children and they go through custody cases with the partners that they share children with, the abusive partners that they share children with, the abusive partner can use access to the children, gaining access to the children legally to continue the abuse of the children or to draw the woman back into the relationship, if he is the one who gets custody of the children.
Dr. Zioli, who's in Michigan State's School of Criminal Justice, you mentioned power and control, and that reminds me of a law school class I had on family law where the discussion was the power and control wheel or cycle.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Now, when a lot of people think of intimate partner violence or domestic violence, they think of physical assaults. And, you know, that is what we talk about. If he ever hit me, I would leave. Why, you know, he hits her, she should leave. But it isn't just about physical assaults. And in fact, physical assaults might make up a small proportion of abusive tactics that perpetrators use. Domestic violence is a system. It is a pattern of abusive tactics used by a perpetrator. And some of those other abusive tactics are, you know, sexual assault, of course, psychological abuse, mm-hmm. economic abuse, intimidation, isolation. A perpetrator can isolate a victim from their family and friends so that when they want to leave, they have few people to turn to because they have been socially isolated. An abuser can prevent a woman from having a job so that she isn't bringing in her own financial resources. He can take her money from her if she does have a job. They also use pets, abuse pets in an effort to control women. They minimize their abuse. They say it isn't all that bad. You know, the point is that there is just this constellation of oppression, of abuse that women go through. And if we're just looking at physical assaults, we're not getting the whole picture. It's easy to ask the question, why does someone leave? When we're only thinking of those physical assaults, right? But if you're thinking of the fact that this person is being isolated, has few financial resources, has the children being used as a bargaining chip.
All of these elements fit in together as a pattern?
All of these elements fit in, and it becomes much harder. There are many more barriers to leaving.
It sounds like, in some regard, it's an invisible cell that the abused partner, typically a woman, very often a woman, is placed in. And are the things you mentioned, are those good signals for people on the outside, family members or friends, to be aware of and mm-hmm. and maybe interact with or understand that there might be some abuse going on?
Oh, yes. Yes. If you see your sister, brother, child in a situation where their partner is dominating them, humiliating them, being, you know, physically abusive to them, obviously, you do want to say something. You do want to say, you know, are things okay in this relationship? You know, what do you want out of this relationship? Mm-hmm. Are you being treated the way you want to be treated? What you don't want to do is come in judgmentally and say, this is obviously abusive. You need to leave right now. Because that may not be helpful. It may not be what the victim needs to hear at that moment. You know, what you need to do is provide victims of intimate partner violence with a listening ear and ask them what they need to make the situation better. Because many of these women know exactly what they need in order to be able to leave or in order to be able to gain safety. And if we ask them and help them, you know, gain those things, then they might be able to gain safety more quickly.
That might be the key to opening that invisible cell.
It really might be.
Right. It sounds like also it's not the kind of situation where a direct intervention is necessarily called for. I think of maybe someone who's steeped in alcoholism where an intervention is helpful.
Sure.
But this is a much more graded one, if that's a way of thinking about it.
Well, you definitely don't want to sit the victim down with, you know, five of their friends and say you need to get out now. Maybe that's called for if the situation is extremely dangerous. But what you want to do is provide resources and provide that non-judgmental ear that is really listening, you know, to hear what the victim wants and telling her there are resources that can help you.
Dr. April Zioli in the Michigan State University School of Criminal Justice, does your research look in any way at demographics? Are there particular women, demographically speaking, who are at greater risk than others?
For intimate partner violence?
Right.
Well, intimate partner violence does cut across racial and social classes, but it really looks like women who are impoverished are more likely to experience intimate partner violence, at least are less likely to be able to gain safety without the help of community resources. you know, as far as intimate partner homicide goes, women of color are overrepresented as mm-hmm. victims of intimate partner homicide. Mm-hmm.
Does anything about the research you have done in the School of Criminal Justice or elsewhere give us a sense as to why Michigan is in the top 10 of the list with respect to intimate partner violence?
Sure. What I tend to focus on is policy. So what are policy solutions to these problems? And most intimate partner homicides are committed with firearms. So what I have been looking at is how the laws that we have regarding firearms in Michigan and across the United States might help women gain safety. And Michigan's legal landscape when it comes to keeping firearms from perpetrators of intimate partner violence, it's kind of mixed. We don't have any state laws that prohibit those convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence from firearm possession. Mm-hmm. There is a federal law in place, but having a state law could strengthen our response.
Do you think that would make a difference then?
We suspect.
Potentially.
You know, that would make a difference. And I'm actually in the midst of a research project looking at that very question right now. Now, one of the laws that we do know makes a difference is, or that research suggests make a difference, is laws prohibiting people under domestic violence restraining orders from having firearms. Those tend to reduce intimate partner homicides in states or cities where they're in place. And Michigan does have a law that prohibits those under permanent domestic violence restraining orders from firearm possession. However, the vast majority of restraining orders in Michigan are not permanent restraining orders. They are ex parte orders that were put in place without a hearing, mm-hmm. At which the offender could defend himself.
Yeah, ex parte means only one of the people is called to court and
exactly
and presents that evidence. So,
right.
So they're not permanent. They're not lasting. And sometimes, Dr. Zioli, people talk about a personal protection order as being nothing more than a piece of paper.
Right. The evidence is somewhat mixed on whether or not domestic violence restraining orders lead to safety. The evidence does suggest that women feel safer mm-hmm. and, are more confident when they have restraining orders. And that is no small thing. If we can help women emotionally and psychologically feel like they are in a better place and that they are more protected with these restraining orders. But it looks like there are some offenders who are otherwise law-abiding, if I can use that term, citizens who would obey the restraining order because they don't want greater sanctions. Mm-hmm. And some are simply not going to care about the domestic violence restraining order. And the trick is figuring out who is who. And research hasn't really been able to do that very well yet, but people are still working on that question.
And this is polyvalent. There are a lot of factors that fit into that. Just one final thought. You mentioned Safe Place. Mm-hmm. Haven House, I know, is in the Tri-County area. Mm-hmm. Some other resources that you can point to?
Names are escaping me. So Safe Place and Eve here in Ingham, mm-hmm. Havens in Oakland County.
Right.
I'm blanking on names right now, but
is there a good place
every
to go?
County has.
Who in the county would be a good point person or a lead person?
Well, I would actually go to the Michigan Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. Their website has a list of resources in every single county. And so that's the Michigan Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. And they not only have resources, but they have, a lending library. There are a lot of resources on their website that people can avail themselves of.
So there is help and there is hope.
In every county.
Great. Thank you so much. We've been talking about domestic violence and domestic homicides in Michigan. Our guest has been Dr. April Zaroli, Associate Professor in the Michigan State University School of Criminal Justice and part of the Research Consortium on Gender-Based Violence. Dr. Zaroli, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.